In a few minutes, we visit the very last Blockbuster video store in America. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. The collapsing Turkish lira at the moment has stopped collapsing. This morning, it's up 5% to 6.53 to the U.S. dollar. Still, it's lost more than a third of its value this month. This is a giant problem for businesses in Turkey who borrowed heavily in dollar or euro loans and for Turkish people who face inflation and higher interest rates. Turkey's economic model has been called into question. Also, ugly relations with the U.S. are not helping. The Turkish president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, had said the lira would stabilize, and it has for now. Wells Fargo Securities global economist Jay Bryson is on the line. Greetings, Jay.
Hey, good morning, David.
So the Turkish situation, the lira actually went up for the first time in a while against the dollar. Does that mean market participants are turning their attention away from Turkey?
Well, I don't know if I'd necessarily go that far. I mean, the Turkish lira has been under a lot of pressure the last few days. These things can kind of subside for a little bit, and they can kind of come in waves. So I don't know if we're completely out of the woods yet, although, you know, the dying down of volatility right now is kind of welcome.
The world has lived through emerging market currency crises before. I remember covering the one in 1997, more than 20 years ago, the Thai baht. You've done some thinking about the general state of emerging market economies and their resilience?
Yeah, so in general, I don't think this is, you know, is a repeat of that. I mean, back then we just had crises after crises that lasted for, you know, more than a year, and it kind of led to long-term capital management in the fall of 98. In general, the developing world isn't as bad off as it was back then. You know, most of these guys have flexible exchange rates, which kind of act as shock absorbers. They have a lot more reserves than they did back then. And so, you know, there can be certain stories out there or other individual economies, like maybe in Argentina or, you know, maybe South Africa. Okay. But in general, I don't think you're looking at a generalized emerging market crisis like we had, you know, 21 years ago.
All right. Well, we'll keep watching the story. Jay Bryson at Wells Fargo Securities. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David.
The U.S. economy runs on gumption, innovation, and yes, on debt. And we'll get an update today on how deeply in hock the American consumer is when the Federal Reserve Bank of New York releases its calculations for the spring to early summer quarter. During the winter, household debt reached a new high, Marketplace's Amy Scott reports.
When people borrow money to spend on homes, cars, and college, it's like fuel for the economy. But, says David Duell, an economist with IHS Market,
if they're doing it too much, it creates the risk of bubbles and of awful outcomes like we saw in the Great Recession.
Though outstanding household debt reached a record high in the first quarter, Duell says that doesn't take into account growth in the number of households or inflation.
So if you look at it from that perspective, it's still way beneath the pre-recession high point.
There are a few signs of trouble, like the increase in student loans as a share of household debt. And Bruce McClary with the National Foundation for Credit Counseling says delinquencies have been rising among subprime borrowers who pay higher rates for auto loans and credit cards.
So there certainly are areas to be concerned about, but I don't think it's time to press the panic button just yet.
One reason not to panic? Americans overall have also been saving a lot more than previously thought. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
Once upon a time, in a land far, far away, people used to have to find parking and walk into a store on Main Street to rent movies on spools of videotape encased in rectangular plastic. Now, early this century, Blockbuster had 9,000 stores worldwide. In the U.S., there is only one Blockbuster left. It's in Bend, Oregon. Reporter Brian Bull of radio station KLCC takes us there.
It's all here. The blue and gold decor, the aisles packed with thousands of titles, and the Blockbuster ticket on the storefront. General Manager Sandy Harding says there's a lot of foot traffic.
We've actually opened a lot of accounts of customers who have come in and admitted that, hey, we haven't been in for a long time and we want to support you and make sure that you guys stick around.
Founded in 1985 in Dallas, Texas, Blockbuster expanded quickly across the country, given its generous rental times and variety of titles.
Hey, if it's on video, Blockbuster probably has it. I mean, we have over 10,000 videos.
Wow.
But changes in technology enabled rivals like Netflix, Hulu, and Redbox to cut into the pie with mail-order DVDs, internet viewing, and movie kiosks. Syracuse University marketing professor Q Lee says Blockbuster was slow to respond.
It heavily depended on the brick-and-mortar retail format, and that made it difficult for them to pull out of it easily and move on to different selling formats, such as online streaming.
Blockbuster filed for bankruptcy in 2010. The Dish Network acquired its remaining stores. Some worked out licensing agreements and kept operating under the brand. Earlier this year, three Blockbusters in Alaska closed, leaving Ben's the sole one in the United States.
You know, I was really surprised, actually. I thought for sure that they would outlast us. The thought of us being the last store, it's pretty amazing to me.
Again, General Manager Sandy Harding.
The fun part about it is watching the parents bringing their children, and they walk around the store, and they're like, so this is what we used to do, and it makes me feel very old, and it's very nostalgic.
Heather Howard, mom of two, is one of those parents showing their kids around.
Yeah, I realized that my kids had never been to a Blockbuster. They never actually rented a movie from a building before.
A few Blockbusters are in Australia, meaning if you're hard-pressed to get your favorite movie and Ben's all out, you've some travel ahead. In Bend, Oregon, I'm Brian Bull for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.